Genesis chapter 41, verses 37 through 57. The proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find anyone else like this, one whom is the Spirit of God?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has shown you all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only with regard to the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Removing his signet ring from his hand, Pharaoh put it on Joseph's hand. He arrayed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in the chariot of his second in command, and they cried out in front of him, "Bow the knee." Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zephenath-Paneah, and he gave him Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, as his wife. Thus Joseph gained authority over the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. During the 7 plenteous years the earth produced abundantly, he gathered up all the food of the 7 years when there was plenty in the land of Egypt, and stored up food in the cities. He stored up in every city the food from the fields around it. So Joseph stored up grain in such abundance, like sand of the sea, and he stopped measuring it. It was beyond measure. Before the years of famine came, Joseph had 2 sons, whom Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, "God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house." The second he named Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my misfortunes. The 7 years of plenty that prevailed in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said. There was famine in every country, but throughout the land of Egypt there was bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph. What he says to you, do." And since the famine had spread all over the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the world came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine became severe throughout the world. May God bless the reading and receiving of His Word.
Thanks, Chris. No one would ever even begin to think that this young man could offer anything. He wasn't like everybody else. He even looked different. And what of those strange stories that they had heard about him? Some of them seemed to come from himself, talking about the stories and the dreams that he had dreamed and how they had seemed to come true. Word on the streets was that he was nothing but a dreamer. A dreamer that claimed God gave life directions to him. Something that many people didn't seem to experience. And to top it off, the head of state gave him a job higher than anybody else. Pharaoh seemed to have bought into all this garbage about Joseph. And he bought into his ideas. How dare he do such a thing? Besides that, you know how dreamers are. They rarely ever follow through and be responsible. Surely Joseph would be just like that. he would only look out for himself. He'd only look to what he could gain, and everybody else would suffer. Well, that was probably the general opinion by many of the Egyptians, especially within Pharaoh's court, especially those who thought they should have gotten this high position that Joseph received. Now, you may be familiar with the first part of the story, which we did not have read this morning, how Joseph, who had had all these dreams and had upset his brothers, had been sold into slavery, and how he ends up, rather unjustly, being thrown into prison. And while he's in prison, he interprets dreams for the chief butler and the baker, one of whom liked him and one didn't, because the butler got restored to his position, and Joseph told the baker that his dream meant Pharaoh was going to kill him. And the baker wasn't too thrilled with that. I guess not. And Joseph said to the butler, of course he didn't say to the baker, he said to the butler, "Now when this dream comes true, please remember me to Pharaoh, because I don't belong in here." And sure enough, the butler was elevated to his former position, even given a raise. The baker was hung, and his bones were left hanging there for the birds to pick clean. And somewhere in all of that excitement and chaos, the butler forgot about Joseph until several years later, when Pharaoh had some dreams with fat cows and skinny cows and the cannibalistic cows, the skinny ones eating up the fat ones, and good corn and bad corn, and the bad corn eats up the good corn. Now that's a strange dream. At least cows have mouths. And nobody could understand what they were. The wisest men that Pharaoh had came in and they couldn't explain it. And about that time, a light bulb goes on and somebody's home, and the butler says, "Oh, by the way, remember way back a few years ago when you had the butler and the baker and me thrown in prison, and well, there was this Hebrew guy there, and he interpreted the dreams, and they came true. If he's still alive, maybe he can help you." And you know, Joseph came up and he interpreted the dreams and told Pharaoh about the plenty, 7 years of good and the 7 years of famine. And then he comes up with an idea and he said, "You know, Pharaoh, if a fellow was smart, he would gather up all the grain, all the crops, and put them in storehouses that first 7 years, so that when the bad years come along, and trust me, they're going to be bad," he said, "there would be food." And that's where Chris began reading, as we pick up in the story. And Pharaoh looks around at all these wise men there, and he's got this Hebrew standing here that's different from them, who's come up with this idea, and he said, "Is there anybody else around like Joseph in whom there is the Spirit of God?" And of course, that's a rhetorical question. Rhetorical question is one that either answers itself, which it does in this case, or deserves no answer because it's so obvious, which it does in this case. And there's a third reason in the case of Pharaoh. If you disagree with him, he's probably going to have you killed. Pharaoh recognized the insights that Joseph had for the right ideas. And he also recognized within Joseph a sense of responsibility. Joseph had been responsible in the way he had carried out his duties, even in prison. And Pharaoh recognized that. And he recognized not only was it a good plan, but if the Spirit of God truly was with Joseph in interpreting these dreams and in doing all of this, then that Spirit of God would lead Joseph to be responsible in the way he carried out the tasks. Many times visionaries see the picture, but do not have the sense of responsibility and thoughtfulness, the practical abilities to carry forth those plans. But Joseph was different. And Pharaoh sensed that Spirit of God within him that guided Joseph. Now, there's an interesting idea here behind the Spirit of God. in Hebrew thought and in ancient Middle Eastern thought, God's Spirit was the source both of inward illumination and of intellectual power. Yet that Spirit was the source of more than just inward illumination and intellectual power. That Spirit was also seen as that which calls a person to move and act responsibly and carry out those plans as they needed to be done. Religion, when truly real, must show itself in responsible action. And Pharaoh recognized that kind of action within Joseph. Not just the intellectual prowess that obviously the Spirit of God had given him, but Pharaoh sensed that this young man believed in responsibility and in acting in a thoughtful and responsible way. It's not just in the ancient Middle East, though, that this statement about religion is true. It's supposed to be true within Christianity as well. That religion, when truly real, must show itself in responsible action. It's not shown necessarily through emotional fervor, though sometimes that can happen. But the deeper understandings which come from thoughtful approaches to God should show forth in thoughtful, deeper action. Joseph was a man of prayer and insight, but he was also one who could perform, and could perform with responsibility. As one writer put it, and I quote, "Egypt would have faced a grim future if Joseph had been lacking in either category. So will other lands and later civilizations if there are no new Josephs. With Joseph, a vision of the great forces moving in his world was linked with compassion for the people and responsible activity in his life." End of quote. Notice, Joseph's connection and commitment to God were foremost. Foremost in his life and foremost in his activities. He was a man of prayer. He was a man of insight. He was a man connected to God and committed to God, not just in words, but also in deed. And this, through this, God allowed him to be put in charge of the entire administration of Pharaoh's country, not just his household. He gets the coveted office of Tiate, which was second only to the king. Pharaoh takes off his own signet ring, which was used in sealing important documents and is a sign of the greatest authority, and places that on Joseph's hand. He gives him fresh linen clothes, a sign of purity. He gives him a golden chain, which was probably what in Egypt was called the reward of gold. It was a coveted chain that was conferred only on those who had given the highest service to the king. And he was given a new name, Zaphnath-Paneah. By the way, we really don't know what that name means. I've looked in my Hebrew dictionaries, I've looked in commentaries over the years, and nobody really knows what that name means. But the giving of a new name, and I'm sure he'd rather have kept the name Joe instead of Zaphnath-Paneah. But the giving of a new name also signified an important change in life. An important change in life. And here in his station in life. What had Pharaoh really seen? And what was he saying of Joseph to the people? He saw an honest obedience within Joseph. As one Old Testament theologian writes, the evidence that the Spirit of God was in him had to do with the deeper aspects. Here was a man who showed his controlled but unmistakable authority. He showed that there was a spirit in him not present in ordinary men, the spirit of truth and of faithfulness. Joseph, this young man in the midst of chaos, in the middle of affliction in his life, I mean, he had been in prison unjustly. In fact, he was thrown in prison because a guy got jealous when Joseph was trying to do the right thing. Rises to a place of authority and prosperity because of his commitment to God and the ensuing responsible action with God. And the land and the people lived through the affliction of famine. And they lived through it because of Joseph's responsible living, even in and through difficult circumstances. Pharaoh recognized that Joseph had come through those, and yet he had stood strong and had done what was thoughtfully right. Because of his faithfulness, his courage, and his deep commitment to God, Joseph rose in power. And he didn't abuse that power. He did not use it for himself, but he used it for the betterment of the entire community. Often in Israel's history, when things seemed the darkest, Israel would rise to its greatest and noblest heights. And that was the case with Joseph. Regardless of what the world was doing and how the stock was doing, the cows, the horses, the camels, the food, different kind of stock back then. But regardless of all of that, Joseph continued to rise and to put forth that sense of commitment to God and that sense of wisdom and insight. So what does this have to do with us today? Actually, our world seems very chaotic. Sometimes our own lives are filled with difficult circumstances. And sometimes we throw our hands up. Sometimes we say, "Oh Lord, help." But then we refuse to take thoughtful and considerate and responsible action in following through. Next Sunday, we will be selecting 4 persons to serve as deacons for 3 years. As we think about those persons who are called to serve, not to be served, but to serve, we need to each and all reflect upon people like Joseph. Those who not only have a vision for God's work, but who seek deeper approaches to understanding God and who exhibit thoughtful and responsible action. We need those who are thoughtful and committed to faithfulness in gathering for worship, faithfulness in studying, faithfulness in praying, faithfulness in working in the service of the church and of the community. Not only do we need folks who are like Joseph, but our community needs folks who are like Joseph. Persons who are more interested in our fellowship than their own advancement, and whose compassion for others is evident, both within the church and outside. Those who will help to lead us and be examples for us of deep connections with God for the greater good of our world and our community. The text says that because of Joseph and God's activity in Joseph, the whole world came to get grain when there was a terrible famine. Our community and our world is in the midst of a famine. I know many of us have more food than we could ever possibly eat. But we're in the middle of a famine of truly understanding and seeking to understand the deep things of God. And we're in even more of a famine when it comes to folks simply seeking God. Because Joseph sought God, was thoughtful and responsible, even when things didn't seem to be going well, the world came and benefited, even his own family, who had wronged him, and who he forgave. Those are the kinds of Christians and leaders we need, and we need to be, so that the world may come to live because of God within us. Our closing hymn is number 596. I surrender all. A part of being those leaders is to be willing to surrender to God and to God's call, those things that perhaps we might rather do. As we sing, our altar is open for any who would make a first-time public profession of faith in Christ, for any who would join this fellowship, for any who would recommit themselves, surrendering all so that the world may know. Number 596.